I'm Brandon Bartnick, and this is the Future of Mobility Podcast.
The Future of Mobility Podcast is focused on the pursuit of safe, sustainable, effective, and accessible transportation of goods and people. Given the critical nature of the world's climate and energy needs, these topics have never been more important, and they're certainly important to me. So, this podcast is a weekly interview series in which I learn from and put the spotlight on the people helping to develop and implement the technology required to move us forward. Who am I? As mentioned, my name is Brandon Bartnick, and I'm an engineer who realized that making a positive impact is the most important thing to me, both through this podcast and my career in the industry. If you're passionate about any of the topics I cover here, please feel free to reach out on LinkedIn or Twitter. I'd love to connect. Also, if you hear anything you like, please consider sharing the Future Mobility with a friend or colleague. This podcast is brought to you by Edison Manufacturing and Engineering. Technology innovation is great, but it doesn't mean anything if we can't bring our impactful products to life, which means we have to build them. And unfortunately, that's easier said than done, especially for startups and evolving companies that need a reliable option for low-volume builds. That's where we come in. Edison is your turnkey manufacturing partner, specializing in build and assembly of highly complex products in annual volumes of 10 to tens of thousands, utilizing an agile and capital-light approach. If you need a trusted manufacturing partner, then please visit us at edison-mfg.com or feel free to reach out to me directly at brandon.bartnick@edison-mfg.com or by visiting my LinkedIn page, Brandon Bartnick. Now to this week's episode. Today's a special episode. So if you look at this, the title, it's a milestone. This is the 200th episode of the Future Mobility Podcast. I've been doing this for 4 years now. And first of all, really appreciate everyone who's listened along the way, supported, provided feedback and input into that. Like, it's incredible. I didn't expect 4 years ago when I started this that I would be doing this 200 episodes in. So that's incredible. I'm really excited because I'm taking this opportunity to explore a topic that's super meaningful to me. And it's something that I spend many of my waking hours thinking about and driving towards. It is how can I, and also we, the people that I work with, make a positive impact, the most meaningful positive impact with our working hours today, the next decade, and for the rest of our working lives. And I have chosen, and been doing this for a couple of years now, to work within the Walbank Industrial umbrella. I'm currently vice president and general manager leading Edison, which is one of our entities. And I'm doing that for a specific reason. I guess there's lots of reasons, but one of them is a very specific reason. I think the overarching reason is this is where I believe I can make the greatest positive impact. And the guest today, which I think this is the latest that I've introduced a guest into the episode, is my boss, Chris Walbank. Chris is the CEO of PJ Walbank Springs, which is our sister company, been around for 42 years. And Chris is the CEO of that company, also the CEO and founder of Edison, which again, I'm now leading in the general manager role. And what we talk about here is kind of big picture what we're doing. And this is, again, this is why I like what we're doing in these topics that I cover here on the podcast, making transportation safer, more sustainable, more effective, more accessible, something that I care about. Manufacturing and supporting the companies that are doing that, which is largely what we're doing at Edison, is also something that I care about. What we are doing is very important. But for me personally, how we are doing it, why we are doing it, the impact and the way, starting from the ground level with ourselves, our employees, our partners, our customers, our suppliers, then our community, and then society at large, making a positive impact on those different groups. That's ultimately what matters to me. And that's the vision. That's what we're driving towards with Chris kind of at the helm here, setting that vision and the way in which we are pursuing it. So that's largely the topic that we explore here. What's the point? What are we doing here? Why are we doing it? How are we doing it? And there is some big picture thinking, because you do need a big, meaningful vision, which is what we're going after. But it doesn't stop there. There's a lot more that goes into this, from the vision level down to the values that we define, how we communicate and incorporate those values and the culture that we want into our work, the standard practices, the seemingly simple stuff like meeting cadence and communication and way of, in which we are strategically going after things, strategic planning processes, recruiting, attention, recognition, all of this is built with the goal in mind of how can we have the greatest impact. And this, what we're exploring here in this 200th episode, is what's the overall vision that we're working towards. So again, really appreciate you being along for the journey. Take a listen. Hopefully this is interesting to anyone out there who is doing work for something more than just the tactical work they're doing, but towards some meaningful vision. If you want to learn more about the way in which you're doing this, shoot me a note. I think my LinkedIn or my contact info, I think, is in the intro of this podcast. Shoot me a note if you want to chat more. I'm always happy to talk about this. I think Chris is as well. But for now, please enjoy this conversation with Chris Wallbank. Today I'm joined by a special guest, Chris Wallbank. Chris, thanks for coming on the Future Mobility Podcast.
Thanks, Brandon. Really glad to be here for episode 200, right? So
yeah,
what a history you've had here, and glad to be number 200. I bet you didn't think this would ever, you'd be hitting a 200 when you first started this.
Yeah, I remember after I got to 100, there was a moment when I was talking with a friend, where I'm like, I reflected and it hit me. I'm like, huh, it's probably more likely I get to 200 than I don't at this point, just because I had already done 100 of it. That was already, you know, 2 years into it. So yeah, I agree with you, and I appreciate you taking the time. It's a nice milestone discussion, and I think the topic we're going to explore here is very, very close to my heart, and I think you're the perfect person to explore it. So yeah, I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, with that said, so there'll be some background in the intro, given some background on kind of who you are and what you're working on. I think the interesting thing to explore here is the vision that we're working towards, and myself as at Edison, as well as a wider team here, which we consider this Wallbank and industrial vision. I think the roots or the genesis of how this path was paved and how you really as the leader here determined, you know, what are the things that were the stake you want to put in the ground, or what are the things that are important and what we're driving towards. Maybe yeah. Starting off, yeah, would you give kind of a background on how did you get to a point where you wanted to set a clear path there, and how did that come about?
Yeah, I was fortunate to, I'm standing on the shoulders of my grandfather and my father, and was fortunate to be in a position, and a lot of the groundwork was laid for me, but we were successful with the business of really substantially growing it. We tripled the business over the course of a few years, and that experience, it sounds nice, and it was good, and we accomplished it. And during that period, there was a lot of bumps and bruises along that path. And there really wasn't there wasn't prior knowledge in terms of how do we do this effectively. We were blazing it for the first time, and, you know, finding our own path. And so I think in a lot of cases, the only way for you to learn and experience that is by doing it. And I don't consider myself someone that has a large ego, but just a incredibly humbling experience, for sure. I think for anyone growing an organization at that level, and yeah, so just lots of lessons learned along the way, and I think, you know, the most valuable lesson I learned, and there was a ton, was fundamentally about leadership. And the organization was growing a lot, and we were having to add resources, and of course we needed to add resources, and but the results in the business weren't really changing. And I came to realize that it wasn't just a resource problem. It was a leadership problem. And that leadership problem started with me, as a leader of the organization. So we had to really reimagine, our organization and where we were headed and the team we had. And, having gone through that experience and kind of emerging on the other side a bit successful yet battered and bruised, I thought it was important to reflect on what would I do differently if I had another shot at this. And some of that inspiration, believe it or not, came from the CEO of Netflix, Reed Hastings, who he had started a company prior to Netflix, and he didn't actually found Netflix. He was hired as CEO, but he started a company prior to Netflix, and it was a company that he created, and he came to be very unhappy with the culture that he presided over. And what's really interesting is when you look at Netflix and what they've done, they've been very intentional about their culture and what they stand for, what they've done. In fact, it's well publicized, they created a Netflix culture deck that explains how they want to do business. And frankly, that specific document was some inspiration for our well-being industrial vision. But what Reed Hastings did is he learned from his past, and that created his future, and it created a much different future and a much more intentional future. Now, I'm not pretending to be Reed Hastings, but I think that I wanted to take and learn what would I do different if I could do this again, and then be intentional about enabling that as we go forward. And that's where the well-being industrial vision comes into play, and that's where it became important that we articulate how we're going to do things differently and take intentional action as we go forward.
Cool. Yeah. And definitely going to dive in there. Maybe one side question before we get there. So what did you learn personally through that process? It's right. So like you mentioned standing on the shoulders of, yeah, of some individuals who paved the path, or at least laid a foundation, you go through this effort and this successfully growing a company and learning some things along the way, some tough lessons, you emerge on the other side of that. And what personally do you think then you determine, you know, how do I think about my work? What's the role? What are the things that actually matter?
Yeah. I don't know if this is quite what you're asking, but let me share something here. Impact has always been really important to me. And I had been frustrated, albeit given a great opportunity, I had been frustrated that our products weren't saving lives. We weren't in pharmaceuticals, we weren't curing cancer. That was a frustrating experience for or thought for me early on, which sounds, I don't know, it sounds maybe silly, but that was important for me. It was important for me to have an impact, and I struggled to see that impact in the way that I thought I needed to see it. And I came to understand and realize that you know, we have, at that time, we had over 100 people living their lives, spending at least 8 hours a day working under our roof. We're impacting them, we're influencing them, we're, at the end of the day, we're helping them put food on the table, you know, enable their kids to go to school, you name it. We're playing a major part in their lives, whether that's directly or indirectly. And I started to understand that better. I realized that, you know, you don't have to cure cancer to have an impact. In fact, there's so many organizations, so many businesses every day that they have a huge opportunity to impact people, and they don't realize what they have in front of them, or they don't think about it this way. And so that was big for me, is understanding how much impact we truly do have. And then, you know, thinking about the products, our products go into, I mean, we're shipping, we supply tens of millions of products, which impact lives we can't see. And that's really cool too. But where we generate the biggest impact and where we get the most fulfillment is the people under our own roof and the impact we can have there. And I think, and what fuels this impact, or part of what fuels this impact, is like, there's a Steve Jobs quote, and he I don't have it quite perfectly, but he talks about how, you know, people have choices, and they could be, someone could be in a monastery in Japan, they could be out sailing on the Pacific. Not everyone has those choices, but what, you know, you could be, you know, there's some level of choice with what you choose to do in life. And his quote is, as it relates to Apple, is, what we're choosing to do this. And he goes on to say, so it better be damn good. And that's how I think about it. You know, there's choices. Not, some people have different choices than others, but at the end of the day, there are choices that we have in our, in this country. And we're choosing to do this, so it better be damn good. And that's how I think about it.
Yeah, cool. And that was, I don't know, one of the things that stuck with me. And I mean, for what it's worth, my own thought, right? Like, I originally wanted to go into aerospace engineering, work for Boeing, because, like, cool big project problem that's being solved. And these two ideas aren't mutually exclusive. Like, you can solve societal problems and make big impact and do things like cure cancer and stuff, and like, oh, but I think it's easy to hide behind the high level goal. And I don't know, maybe I'm just making up this quote over here, but like, that sticks with me, of, if you want to get to the many, start with the one, and start with, in order, impact your employees, your partners, your customers, your suppliers, your community, and then society, is at least the way it's, and I think it's at least loosely aligned with the way you described it there.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that, it's a lot. I mean, it's easier. It's easier to attach impact to maybe the more traditional means, but it's easier to see that. But there's a lot of impact to be made in this world, and it's about how we perceive it, and it's about what we choose to do about it. And you know, another thing I'll share is that really kind of influenced my view here is Bob Chapman. He's the CEO of Barry Weinmiller, and he wrote a book called Everybody Matters. And yeah, he had an epiphany too. He talks about in his book and about how he was kind of a traditional, his dad passed away at a young age, and he had the opportunity to take over his family, that business, which became a family business. And he was what he would categorize as a traditional CEO, who really, traditional manufacturing CEO, wasn't really focused on impact or people. And he went to church one day with his wife, and it was there was a kind of an inspirational speech given by the pastor, and he realized, wow, what an impact this is making on this congregation. And then it hit him that he had people under his congregation for 40 hours a week that he wasn't impacted. And kind of a light turned off, and that really created a whole transition for him and that organization. We're now certainly one of the industry leaders in terms of how they think about impact and their people. Anyway.
Yeah. So back to the idea then, okay, you go through this process, the painful lessons, and come out on the other side, decide, you know, you want to have impact, you want to build a culture that you're proud of and that you want to be a part of and that you enjoy. And where do you go from there? I mean, that's a super high level Yeah, it's a difficult problem to try to, like, it's abstract, right? So, like, where do you start?
Yeah. It starts with, for me, I felt it was really important to find the right people. And I wasn't sure how to do that. I'm still learning, but I felt that in order to find the right people, I had to document what my views were in a way that other people could understand and that could be passed around and people would feel it was genuine and people would either relate to it or not. It was actually most important that people that related to it did, and those that didn't wouldn't. It wasn't to try to find everyone, it was to try to find individuals that saw the vision as their own in a lot of ways. Like, they would see that they would be able to achieve their life's pursuits through this vision, and they saw themselves in that. And they aligned with the values that we have as an organization, and our how is really important. It's the what's relevant, but the how is something we care a lot about here, as you know. And of course we have to have the capability level for the individual to be able to move the needle, depending on what the role is. But I felt it was really important to create a document that explained that, and in order to get in front of the right people. That took a long time to get to a point where I felt it was representing my views and genuine. And, you know, there's, at the time, it's not a big deal now when I think about it, but when I was doing it, there was a lot of, I mean, you put yourself out there. You may subject yourself to criticism or other things, and my views aren't so polarizing, but you still put yourself out there. And that was something I was uncomfortable with, but felt necessary. And so, yeah, so for me, I think it's pretty simple. It's by no means easy. There's a big distinction there. But I think it's about identifying those people, finding those people. And that's 80% of it, is really finding the right people to help enable what you're trying to do. And that's how you create scalability. That's how you create sustainability in terms of the vision of what you're trying to do.
Can you talk a bit about the people flywheel? So where's that come from, and why is that important?
Yeah. So the people flywheel is important because we believe in having the right people. And we believe those right people care about the how, and they also care a lot about learning and development. So we look for individuals who don't think they have it all figured out, and they realize that there's more room for growth. And honestly, like, I don't know if I ever feel like I've gotten it figured out. Like, that's a bad sign. And so I don't think you ever reach that pinnacle. And I think we look for people who aspire to be continuous learners. And so we think it's really important that if people are going to be our fuel for success, we define the best people. We have to present opportunities for them to grow. That doesn't mean we hand things on a silver platter and say, "Hey, here's everything you need. Go and get it." No, there's a lot of grit and determination and effort from an individual to do that. But nonetheless, the organization has a responsibility to provide some level of opportunity for those individuals to go and impact things. And so if we're able to find the right people, give them intentional development opportunities that they also are proactive with, then they're really going to be positioned to be our fuel for the future. And the flywheel really builds on itself, right? So if you keep finding those people, you keep developing them, then instead of a lot of organizations, it's about, okay, we have these opportunities, now we have to go hire. Well, there's another approach, and it's let's hire the people and let's let them have them create the opportunities, as opposed to, okay, we've got the opportunities, now we've got to go hire the labor to go and fulfill this task. I think that's backwards. And yeah, you can't go and hire the whole team before you have the work and before you have the opportunity. But if your mindset is one in which the people are actually the fuel for the future, I think that's what creates the sustainability. That's what keeps the flywheel moving. And I think that's how we win. I think that's not only competitively, but I think that's how we make an impact. I think it's not only how we win as an organization, but I think that's how we further our impact.
Yeah, and I don't know if this will come out as a clean question, probably not, but it feels like a privilege, like in several of these aspects, right? It's not grant for given that you can go and find people before you have the work, that you can find and pay the best people, that you can invest in your people, that you can, you know, care. Like, what do you think are the innate, because I think there's a host of people out there who might hear that and be like, yeah, heads in the clouds of like, yeah, even if I wanted to, I can't because I need to make money. And what do you think of as the enablers that allow you to think long term and allow you to put people first?
Yeah, I think every organization is different, and you have to start somewhere, and you earn that privilege. So, starting out here and now, like, if I'm just hearing this, me speak for the first time about this, like, it's radically different, you know, when I was even thinking about this. I didn't have there wasn't any of this. And, you know, it's still not perfect, but I think you have to earn that privilege. I think it's driven by someone's belief if they think that's how they're going to win and whether they want to make that sort of impact. So, I think it's you've got to start somewhere. And, you know, if you look around today and you'll have to see yourself surrounded by people that are aligned with your values, that understand that are aligned with where you want to go long term, and in every case are more capable than you in different ways. That's the North Star. Now, yeah, that's not overnight. That doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen in any reasonably short period of time. But it does happen. But it's something you have to build on. It's something you have to be intentional about. It's something you have to earn the right to do. And we've definitely earned that right. Now, talk about standing on the shoulders. That's helpful for sure to have a base. But as you know, our leadership team and the team we have is radically different than where it once was. And that's because we've had to earn and change that.
And how do you deal with the iterative nature of this, right? So like you have to, and the way you describe it, you kind of throw an initial dart at the wall that you believe in, right? That here's where we're going. But through this process of bring people in and help them figure out exactly what we're going to do to get there, like there's learnings that get incorporated into it, and there's also seemingly and maybe this is true for anyone who is a continuous learning and improvement focused person, but like you're never at the finish line. There's always that feeling of wanting more and maybe being happy with what we've done but not being content. Like how do you deal with that as kind of the person who's trying to look over and steer the ship of, yeah, you started somewhere with a vision, you bring people in to try to execute on that, but then you're learning along the way.
Yeah, it's something I'm really comfortable with, just personally. I believe in iteration. I believe in the learning that you get from that. I believe in trying something and taking that iterative step. That's just how I think about things. And I think the other way that I'm just wired is, I don't know best words to use. I think it's a gift and a curse. So I'm perpetually dissatisfied, but I think in a healthy way. Not like I'm perpetually unhappy, but I think that there's always room for us to grow and get better. And I think about that for myself. I think about that for others. And that's because I want what's best. Going back to the Steve Jobs quote, right? Like, I want it better be good. If we're doing it, it better be good. And if we're, otherwise, what's the point? If it's not good, then it's not worth it, in my opinion. And so I want greatness for others. And I always kind of, I have that in mind. I don't know if I answered your question really, but I think some of it maybe is just kind of how I'm wired. But tell me if I didn't answer it, so I can get another go at that.
No, it's good. I have a follow-up question that comes to mind. This is fun because, like, these are all topics that we've touched on in some spot, obviously, in past conversations. But, like, now I have you behind the behind the mic, and I have a different angle I can take. But so the interesting thing, right? So, like, being perpetually dissatisfied and striving for more, that's something, at least personally, took me a long time to get to mature to mature to a point where, like, right, I'm used to succeeding in things. That's a whole track record of, like, I've done what I wanted to for the most part and kind of achieved objective. We now have very lofty objectives that are abstract in nature because it's more about how and why than exactly what. And again, I've gotten comfortable with this approach, but at the same time, like, as we're building out the team and you're bringing in other people who should be high performers, you're looking for people who are good at what they do and who are striving to be better, but also stretching them beyond the point of guaranteed success. And likely it's going to be failures on top of each other that then only when you look back and you're like, oh, look, we made a ton of progress over the last year, despite the fact that we've been dissatisfied this whole time. Like, how do you as a leader go about instilling and finding that right balance between pushing for better and not being satisfied at the same time having the reality of, like, no, we should be proud of what we've done till right now?
Yeah. I think high achievers, people that have accomplished a lot, this feeling, they're used to success, yes, for sure. But a lot of individuals who have personally achieved things, they also have a dissatisfaction. And that the story or some rationale that I've heard in the past to explain that away is, to explain it is, high achievers are often focused on the horizon, like, of what's possible. And they're constantly focused on getting there. But the problem is the horizon, you don't actually ever get to. No matter how hard you try, it's impossible to arrive. And that's how, and then so if you measure your progress on reaching the horizon, it's really hard to be happy, because the horizon is a tough one to get to. You never do it. So the important thing to consider is, this is what's referred to as the gap in the gain. Something I learned from Dan Sullivan is, the gap is where you're at to the horizon. The gain is when you look in the rearview mirror. It's important to do that to measure the gain, which is where we were to where we are today at some set interval. And that's, I think, important from a reflection standpoint, to incorporate it at some frequency, whether it's whatever makes sense. But we do it quarterly, as you know, and I do it annually personally, as well at other frequencies. So I think it's really important to have that perspective and take stock of where, I think be dissatisfied in a healthy way, but take stock of where we've been and where we're at and recognize that, hopefully progress has been made, but recognize what's been done there.
Yeah.
That's really important.
Maybe adjacent topic, but the culture and values is something that very important to you. And I know the first hire you make for Wallbank Industrial is a chief people officer, right? An excellent individual, Tracy, who's kind of invaluable. How do you think about trying to build the right culture and bring together people who have a shared common set of values, especially as we scale?
Yeah, culture to me is really just how people show up every day. It's just how we're behaving, how we're acting. I walk on my office. How do I get treated? What are our norms? Just how do people behave every day? It's pretty simple. I mean, and there's a lot of work on culture, and there should be. But it's not. And it's complicated to get a good culture, I think, and it's not easy, but it's just how we all behave.
So what are then so culture is how it's not super complex, right? It's how people behave. It's how it's an environment. It's just how things happen. Same time, there's a lot of ways that culture is sour, and there's a lot of ways in which you can, like you mentioned, retastings, you can unintentionally build the culture that you weren't looking for. And I think that's actually the default. Like, if you're not intentional about it, you're going to look up at some point and look around and be like, well, this isn't exactly what I thought I was getting to. It's like, how do you build intentionality into building the culture that you're trying to build?
I think it's, you actually have to hire and fire based on your values. You have to have clear values. You have to find people that meet them. And you have to exit people that don't. And that's absolutely core. There can't be a compromise on that. That cannot be compromised. Maybe over short periods of time, but over the long term, you can't compromise, because high performers sniff it out, and they won't play in a game where that's tolerated. And so, yeah, I think long term you have to hire and fire. And we, there's the axiom of hire slow, fire fast. And as you know, we take a while. We take the right amount of time, I would argue, to vet people coming on board, to make sure that they're the right team members and that they live our values. I think one thing I say a lot is we highly value diversity of thought and diversity of experience. We don't value diversity of values. And I think if you can ensure alignment on values, the disagreements or the discussions that are had with other members of the team, there's alignment with where we're headed. It just may be the debate is how we get there. But that's a lot less than, I mean, that's to be debated, and that should be debated. But how we treat others, how we work with others, there shouldn't be a debate there. We should just be aligned. And that, mm-hmm. that can waste a lot of time. And I think that's not only can it waste time, but that can set you up for the path you don't want to be at.
There are, and I think for good reason, and it served us well, values that have been defined in short terms, right? So we have take ownership, either win or learn, treat others as you'd like to be treated, and challenge the status quo as our four core values that we're working. Those are interesting at surface level. You hear that, and I think anyone listening to this is probably somewhat know what we're talking about there. But I think what means a lot more is what those words actually mean to us. And so, like, there's right, but behind each of these, there's description, there's, I mean, paragraphs of information as well as stories and key practices that go with this. And the can you speak to, like, how you've evolved in your understanding of values and communication of those values to really, because hiring and firing to your values, building a culture to your values is easier said than done. So can you speak to that aspect of it?
Yeah. There's different schools of thought on coming up with values. It should be a team-based approach where you get your team together and you guys, you know, people share what they value, and through that experience you come up with values. There's an approach of, well, the leader is a representative of the people that we want. They've been the hiring. They know, and so that can be set top down. I don't know, it might sound a little bit more harsh than what it is, but it's here's our values, and people align with that or they don't. But that's another approach. And I think I'm going to advocate for the second option, because I think the first option assumes that you have all the exact team members in place today. And if you don't, end up in a situation where you have values that maybe don't reflect what the leader wants, but that's what comes out through a democratic process. And that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because you want values to be represented where you want to be. Not necessarily. I mean, there's also the kind of the trade-off, and it's talked about a lot, and Maggie Mancini talks about it as having aspirational values. Like, you also don't want to be in a position where your values don't characterize your organization whatsoever. And they're purely, we have Disney's values because we like, well, that doesn't make sense. But I think there is some aspiration acceptable, in my opinion, because you may not be exactly where you want to be. Most organizations are. And, but you need to be clear about what your values are going to be. And, ideally you have some critical mass, who represent that and who can do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I think about it.
Yeah. And I also think that's the right approach, in part. Like, and we talked about, I don't know, as an example, small thing, but like the verbiage of either win or learn rubs me the wrong way at times, because I don't believe that those are two opposed things. I don't think you have to lose to learn. I think you should just always be learning. And
sure.
But at the same time, I'm one person, and I have lots of opinions. Other people have lots of opinions. This is close enough that, like, I agree with those words of, again, and the intent, which was, well, we should try to win. When we don't win, we should learn, and we should move on. And we can then adjust, and like the way we talk about it is not, yeah, we're trying to lose and learn. Like, it's clear that the intent was, no, this is a learning culture that we're building. We want to win, but we always love, we want to look for the good things, and even when we lose, and we want to learn, and we want to be improving. So, like, I think it's so important that, like, there isn't a crippling fear of every single word needs to be bulletproof, and, like, because there's going to be different opinions, but, like, just get something down, work with it, mold it, and stand by it.
I think so. I think it's, and there was certainly a lot of thought put into it at the time, but yeah, I think it's less about the exact words, more about, you know, is there general alignment, and could people be behind it? And well, that's what I think is important.
And this is super big, complex question. I mean, I just feel like I spent almost an hour recently with mutual friend and advisor, Stan Siewicz, on this type of topic. Like, how do you actually then put these in practice, right? So like the going from like even the idea of hiring and firing to your values is interesting, but also like incomplete in that like there's the in-between there. Like you bring someone in who has the right values and they run into difficult times. There are going to be times when maybe they don't show them perfectly. Maybe there's a gap in their capabilities with where they need to go. And like you're trying to learn and grow the team. And I think within the Walbank Industrial vision, you've maybe taken an approach of 9 key practices, right? Of like, okay, what are the things, there's infinite things that you can work on and a lot of things that you should be working on, but what are the most important things that we should be working on to enable this vision in the way that you want to? Can you talk to kind of that, maybe that process, but more importantly, like what came out on the other side, and what do you believe as the things that require the most attention and focus
for us to enable the vision?
Yeah.
For us to enable the vision, I'll go back to, I mean, we have the key practices that's meant to guide us. And, but I'll go back to what I said earlier and, kind of the right people, you know, and that might sound redundant, but I think like you talked about values and for us, you know, we don't expect people to be perfect. In fact, when we talk about values, it's like, we expect our best people to show up with our values the majority of the time, right? Doesn't mean they're doing unethical things or other things, but like no one's perfect. And like, that's okay. We're not looking for perfection, but we want to achieve our values. We want to see our values show up most of the time. And so like, going back to hiring piece, like it's really important for us to find people who have embodied these values over the course of their career, however long their career is, or in their personal life. That's uncompromising. That's super important. But when I think about, if I go back to like, how do we achieve this vision? How do we impact the world? How do we impact a billion lives? It's simple, it's not easy, and it's find the right people who are aligned with the vision and are capable of executing on it. And I know we figure it out from there.
Yeah. And maybe I'll throw a plug. I mean, if you're listening and you want to learn more and you think you're intrigued by what we're talking about here, shoot me a note. I think my email's at the beginning of it. It's my first last name at edison-mfg.com. Shoot me a note if you want to learn more about what we're talking about here. Talk to Chris. Because, like, yeah, we perpetually learning and then also looking for the right people and growing our current growing our team, but also looking for people who are interested and can contribute to what we're doing here.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Brandon.
So do you think, I know we kind of meandered through, and like I said, I had fun kind of digging deep on, a little deeper on some aspects. I mean, there's tons of stuff that we just scratched the surface on, right? And like the approach to performance, leadership, and goal setting and accountability and coaching and building a meeting cadence and a communication cadence and a way of work that's aligned with the values, like that itself is a hour plus long this discussion. But is there anything that comes to mind as things that we missed in the conversation here?
Yeah, I mean, you just touched on a little bit, like, I think it's important. I've come to appreciate the value of systems and repeatability and scalability that's how we've had success in our business. That's also how we've had success in creating standards or creating systems. And you talk about meeting cadences, you talk about planning. I think, and the way I think about that stuff is like, if you're not trying stuff, like if you're not trying to get better, if you're not trying things and iterating off of that, I think that's a mistake. And we've tried a lot of things as it relates to meetings, and I think we've got a pretty good structure and system now. But it's not static. You know, it's something we're continuing to iterate. We just made it, as you and I, as we know, we just made an iteration, you know, a few weeks ago with our meeting structure that we have at Edison. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's a continually evolving system, but the value of having structure, of having certain communication cadences with your team, it wasn't all that long ago where, and it was normal where, you know, you'd show up for work and yeah, you might talk to people throughout the day, but there wasn't a structure in place in which to do that intentionally. And things look so different now from where they were then. But that's, I think that's more the norm than the exception. And I think one of the most overlooked things within our organization is communication. And I don't pretend to be the world's best communicator, but I think if you can put in systems that help enable that, then you're a lot farther ahead. And we've done that through experimenting with all sorts of systems, whether it's EOS or scaling up or read a lot of Patrick Lencioni around here. He certainly has a point of view that we agree with, that he articulates in the advantage. Yeah, so that's what I kind of a specific topic there, but those are my thoughts there.
Yeah, cool. I mean, and maybe this isn't required, but just for clarity, anyone listen, like it's not a flavor of the week thing, right? Of like, hey, someone happened to read a new book over the weekend, suddenly everything gets flipped on their table. Of like, yes, we're continuously learning, bringing outside thoughts and stuff, but at the same time, like there's intentionality for how things are. Things change, like there's different seasons, especially Edison's a growing, quickly evolving company. Like our way of work right now is different than it was 3 months ago, which is going to be different in 6 months from now. And like there should be iterations and things that we're trying and evolving over time, all based on a strong foundation, not necessarily just taking in whatever is popular in the moment. But absolutely. It is iterative.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not just changing something every all the time. But we do consider what's going to create value and take stock of where we're at. And I think not doing that is a dangerous place to be.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Chris, really appreciate you taking time and doing this. It's been fun exploring this. Like I said, super important topic to me of like what, I mean, obviously I align obviously in the work that I've done for the last couple of years and plan to do going forward of like, this is a vision that I get behind and see myself and making an impact in different aspects of it. And, cool to be able to explore this in a public setting with you. So, any closing thoughts, anything
else? Yeah, I was really glad to be able to do it to Brandon, and obviously not our first conversation, on the topic, but, glad to share it with the world here and what we're up to. And, some of our learnings along the way, there's a lot. I mean, it's kind of the tip of the iceberg what we shared today, but yeah, glad to have been here today and shared some feedback. So thanks for allowing me to participate.
Oh, thanks. There you have it. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Chris Walbank. What stands out? So as we alluded at the end, these are topics and conversations that even Chris and I are having regularly, right? This is setting this. I mean, this is kind of fun that I get to do it in a public setting, put them on the spot and ask questions maybe in different ways and explore different aspects of these questions that I don't tend to in a kind of day-to-day conversation, but not necessarily like new topics, but super meaningful for me. And I hopefully you got something out of this, whether it's the content itself or the way in which we're approaching it or whatever. But the thing that I want to go back to and highlight is that that's so meaningful to me is it starts with this vision, this big, meaningful thing that we are collectively striving towards, bigger than any one of us can achieve, and that stretches us collectively and individually to be better, to do better, and to grow as individuals. So it starts there, but it certainly doesn't stop there. And it trickles down from the 30,000 foot view all the way down to the super tactical things. And it's this continuous process of going up and down that ladder of how are you designing the day-to-day, the hour-to-hour approach to how you do things that then stack up to the weeks, to the months, to the quarters, to the years in service of this more meaningful, bigger picture thing. And I guess the best way I describe it is one of the things that's so exciting to me is being part of this group, this team that has a big, meaningful, impactful thing that we're going after, also has the right people in place to go and get it, and is approaching it in a way that we're going to successfully go and achieve the things that we're trying to do. And that, I don't know, I think that sounds overly simplistic, and there's certainly not meant to discount or overlook the challenges that come with it, because they're numerous and also endless of the challenges that need to be overcome in pursuit of this. But it's also, there's nothing else that I'd rather be doing. So I appreciate you listening. Hopefully, like I said, you got something out of the conversation. I love exploring this type of topic, especially since I'm spending so much of my time working toward within this ecosystem. As mentioned to me, you know, if you want to chat, there's absolutely no obligation or expectations with that conversation. Again, this is why I'm working, why I'm doing what I'm doing, is exploring and going after the things that are explored in this conversation. So I love to chat with any like-minded people who are rowing in the same direction. As always, 200 episodes in. Really appreciate you listening. There's more to come next week.
Thank you for listening to the Future of the World.